everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight, the last episode. In the tradition of the temple of this world, who are always, whenever they want to go to the forest, you know, they will tell you, I have to go. They will make a clickbait title. Steven Robinson says, sound cut off. I hear sound here. Are there problems with the sound? Do people hear me? Let me know on the regular chat and we'll see. There's been problems for 3 days on Odyssey. They seem to have reverted to an old system, and we lost the people at the last minute of the show yesterday. It's back. Okay. People are receiving me. So I thought this will be a very chill show because I'm totally feeling the vacation mood. I've almost never had vacation. I always had something else that would fill the vacation. But now I have a true month where I will be doing tourism. I'll be going to explore the U.S., visit various states, and have fun. So I'm really feeling it at this point. I am not in the mood for a big show. But perhaps we can talk about the history of what I did on the internet and what point are we at. So I started making videos in 2013, 2014. I was personally a consumer of YouTube videos. But I was very disappointed by what there was. So I started little videos as a scientist. And eventually I found that everything on the internet was paying more, was more attractive. A career in YouTube simply had better prospects than working in a university. And on top of it, when you work at a university, your money is not your money. You have the problem that you are locatable for exes. And so my private life was being attacked by my ex in 2015 with false allegations. And I was like, okay, there's no future for me in the regular economy, but YouTube seems to pay more. It's more fun, and ultimately I speak to more people, because if I get into elementary school teachers, high school teacher, or even university professor, I'm going to talk to 30 people per year approximately, and I'm going to have to teach them stuff that I didn't even decide that it was important. So I was like, okay, everything is more interesting with YouTube. And so I made the calculation in my head that rationally, there should be, eventually YouTube should outcompete the school, basically. Of course, that was before YouTube had started censoring, but that was my elementary thought. Even if that wasn't to happen actually, I was like, okay, there's a better medium than the school, and the school really doesn't work. And anyways, it's not an interesting job. So I started dedicating more and more time creating videos, and eventually we got through the era of people started, because I was doing more and more live, people started talking about race and IQ. And I was committed to only one thing, really, or one or two things when starting my YouTube career. One, the truth before anything else. And second, a defense of the white heterosexual sexual men, because I knew that we were under attack. I had been attacked in my private life, and I knew that this was coming for everyone. So those were the two elementary goals that I had set. So eventually people started asking me about race and IQ, and I'm like, I'm not a specialist at all about race and IQ. I don't really care about this question that much. Like, to me, IQ is not a fascinating subject, although still, as of today, it's the thing that people keep coming back to me about, just because apparently I'm one of the only one with credentials ready to say it. It's like, okay, I'm going to give the actual answer, the truth, to this question. And eventually, just stating the truth about this question led people to be constantly thinking that this is my specialty and want to do full interviews on this subject. I got into the debate with Kraut and T, and that's how I became basically a representative of a certain branch of the right wing. Meanwhile, there was also Trump, the rise of Trump in 2016, that was already placing me on the right. Hermit M says, I was seeing race IQ stuff on YouTube, but when I came across your stuff just before the Kraut drama, I right away saw how dispassionately you were discussing it, which set you apart from most for me. Yeah, exactly. It's like anyone has either the taboo of not talking about it, not recognizing the truth, or they are so emotional about it that you can feel them invested in a racist conclusion of sorts. And I've never been emotional about this subject, perhaps because I have too much respect for life. Like, I respect the squirrel. I see the squirrel. I know it doesn't have much of a big brain, but it's a squirrel, and it has just the brain that it needs to eat nuts and run around and escalate trees, and that's all it needs to do. So coming at it from a biologist's perspective, I don't even see the point of the taboo. But the point of the taboo, and this is where I struck a gold vein, the point of the taboo is a massive societal project of deception, which involves basically the people who are responsible for fact-finding in our world, in the media and in the academia, are heavily formed by Jewish people. And they have an inherent fear that is injected in them, maybe at birth through genes or maybe through some sort of childhood trauma with Holocaust education. But whatever it is that happens, Jews, it is a fact, they are afraid of the people around them starting to understand race. And it's ridiculous because we are supposed to be at the peak of civilization. We're supposed to be at the peak of science. If anything has been ever known before, we should still have it not only in our wisdom, but we should have more than this. Like anything. In any domain, we know more today than 10 years ago and more today than 1,000 years ago. But on the question of race, I found that this is not true. It's one of the subjects where we know less. It's incredible when you consider how much less we know in our public conversation than a random peasant from 1,000 years ago. It's amazing the power of self-deception. It's to that level. It's not that you need a Galileo to beat the current state of discussion on race. It's that a random person, a low IQ peasant from 1,000 years ago would probably have a better instinct into understanding, hey, I'm not going to breed with anyone because I understand that there will be consequences down the line. Even if they didn't know about genes, they knew that. Which is why marriage was a thing. And, you know, there was. And so I fell into that black hole of, well, just because I talk about Trump and race, I'm getting this pushback from Jewish journalists and intellectuals just writing hit pieces about me. And this helped me strike a new gold vein in terms of my understanding of all this, which is why are there so many Jews pissed at me? Why are they all Jews when they write a hit piece? What is the mechanism here? And of course, touching that question is the ultimate question that gets you canceled. But again, I was following two rules when I joined YouTube. The truth and the defense of white heterosexual men. And so I didn't see a problem asking myself the question, is it possible that this paranoia of wanting to shut down any conversation on race is ultimately leading Jews to kind of make a first strike. A first strike in attacking people that don't deserve to be attacked. And is it possible that if they do too much of this, eventually people will say, hey, you lost my trust. Like, who reads the Daily Beast and thinks that they're reading the truth anymore? I don't know. There's the leftists that may read it because it triggers their emotion and they want JF to be evil. But who seriously reads the Daily Beast as a reference point for fact-finding? No one. No one. And as the surveys, people don't trust journalists. And yet, what do? They take these hit pieces and then they make a Wikipedia page about you, which inherits from the credibility of Wikipedia, because Wikipedia happens to be credible when it talks about a math equation or a physics theory. But then they have the life of JF, and I read this, and it's not my life. So I found a system of ethnic solidarity that was detrimental to Western civilization. And when you connect the dots, it is not foreign to all other problems of Western civilization. There is a reason why there is so much hate against white people. There is a reason why certain racial minorities like blacks are basically being gaslighted to hate white people. Like, the media likes it. They want more of it. And yet they will tell you that their goal in life is anti-racism. But what they won't tell you is that anti-racism is when there's no more white people on earth. That's when the anti-racist has won. So the anti-racist is a racist, but I don't want to get into the Democrats are the real racist, because that's also a bad argument. But yeah, so I found myself censored, canceled on false grounds. And it never really hurt me. It hurt me economically in the sense that I lost big audiences on YouTube, but I've always found a way to survive. And to me, the enterprise that I was getting in from the beginning has been one of self-destruction anyway. Like, I don't want to be part of the regular economy. I don't want to be dependent on it. So I'll find whatever else I can to survive. And to me, it's always been, if I have to eat mushrooms in the forest at the end of it to survive, I'll be happily eating mushrooms in the forest. I'll be building a shack in a place you'll never find, not connected to the internet. To me, that's always been my basis of success. So the fact that I've succeeded at having family, having land, having a place to live, and having enough wealth to guarantee my liberty until I die, that is more than I expected, more than I wanted, and it's an honor to have gone through all this. But there's lots of people who have been making as much money as me in the golden era of YouTube, and you'll not see them very well today because they've not been smart with their money. But I ended up striking just good timing. And, you know, getting into Bitcoin earlier because I was living on the internet and because I was looking for outs of the system. And in the end, that my instinct has led me to the right reactions. I knew that the system was bullshit, so I tried building an alternate system. And somehow, although you could see a lot of the events in my life as random, I tend to look at it as, no, it was guided exodus. And a guided exodus alongside a whole society that is doing the same. And now they're realizing how much Bitcoin is useful. Now suddenly when their ex wants their house, suddenly they like Bitcoin. Now when the government is into the affairs of PDD, PDD must be thinking about Bitcoin. But we've thought about it way before them, for events of cancellation that are so small in these big people's lives that they wouldn't even see us. They wouldn't know that we exist. But there we were before they were attacked, before they were canceled, we were canceled. And as often people talk of the canary in the coal mine effect, I was a canary in a coal mine for many things. First, I believe that there's lots of TOS of YouTube that was specifically developed to address the public space, which was becoming a problem for them. So, you know, when you see the series of rules, it moves from, okay, violence, that we had never done. And then they started covering claims of ethnostate. That's exactly what we were talking about, of course, as a thought experiment. But that was the time at which a thought experiment started being banned on YouTube. And then, oh yeah, you don't even have to talk about ethnostates, but if you say something that could be interpreted as disparaging about a race, you'll get banned. And then, oh, if your wife opens an independent YouTube channel and she makes statements about immigration, will demonetize you. So they've extended the rule constantly to restrict my space of action. And then, what was it? Vaccines, COVID-19, exactly where my coverage was added. And all the time, I've always been doing this coverage, this kind of innovative, edgy, provocational content before the rules came in. So the rules were always in reaction to stuff that we were making. Then I moved to Odyssey because I couldn't take it anymore to be constantly living under the oppression of Susan. And here we are. We've been here for I don't even know how much time. It's been a couple, must be a year, 2 years, I don't know. But I'm much more happy here because I can share everything I want with you guys. And that's the trajectory of my life for now. And in parallel to all this, the revolutionary phenotype is part of my strategy and what I've been doing, which is I've been wanting to ask, will they ignore a valid scientific theory? And it seems they will. They will as long as they can. How long is that? Maybe 20 years. When I wrote The Revolutionary Phenotype, I told you guys, I think we're going to get full acceptance maybe between 20 and 40 years. So we're still on schedule. And if anything, we've had more enthusiasm about the book than I expected, because lots of sales to begin with. I made a living with the sales of this book, basically. And then Robert Travers, one of the greatest biologists alive, accepts the theory. So I didn't expect this when I wrote it. So it's been 4 years on Odyssey, says Human Drill, since 2020. But maybe I was copying my videos to Odyssey, but am I exclusively on Odyssey since 4 years? That would surprise me, but I don't know. I don't know. So yeah, what will I do going forward? Well, I will use this 1 month to really relax my mind. I'd love to do all sorts of things. I'd love to continue working on programming, if that's possible in that domain. I'd love to continue a small coverage of the news and perhaps expand on the audience with Twitter clips. I would love it if Twitter clips became a main platform, because I love the freedom of thought there, although we still have Nick Fuentes gone. I feel that if you stay with the news reporting, I can say what I want. There's going to be the Canadian law to watch as they make a new law that is so unclear that I'm pretty sure I would have to delete all videos of my past and be very careful as to what I say. I may be unable to cover certain subjects because of this law, if it passes. That's one thing we will watch. But in the end, I want to be a representative, a continued representative of a generation of internet creators that have searched for the truth and that had set up a social system for truth seeking and debating and intelligent engagement in the public space. But a generation of YouTubers that got fucked in the ass by Susan Wojcicki and her followers and the people who came after. So I want to be there as long as possible for decades, if I'm still alive, to remind people that the current internet is not what the internet is. It's not what the internet was developed for. The current internet is a cartel. And we barely are recovering from the censorship era, and we are not recovered fully yet. And it needs people to stand there and shame the Daily Wire of this world. Even if I'm not a unique voice in this shaming, I think that I put my weight in the balance, and I want to be remembered by history to have taken the right side. Because when you think about a lot of this cuckery that's happening in the current world, people having taboos, not wanting to engage on the truth, do you really think that people will have these taboos in 1,000 years from now? Almost certainly not. Either they will be decocked because they will have evolved away from having taboos that lead to bad lifestyles, or they will have totally different taboos that will be so out there of our culture that they won't mind looking back and understanding who told the truth. Who told the truth, who stood there telling lies. And that's what I'll keep doing. I'll try to make my best to give little punches here and there to make the public space continue to advance. That is my plan long term. I hope we'll continue having fun thinking about the news, doing maybe some philosophy, some math. I think I will use some of that month to just go full math and spend time testing ideas that I've been wanting to test, but I didn't get a chance to. And most importantly, I'll be spending time with my girlfriend and cuddling, and that will be it. We'll just cuddle across the U.S. On the road, in the forest, wherever we are. Stephen Robinson says, breaking, a large barge crashed into the Arkansas River bridge, causing damage to both the ship and the bridge pillar. Oklahoma, earlier this evening, just before 1:30 p.m., a large barge crashed into and struck the Arkansas River bridge at the Care Reservoir in Salisa, Oklahoma, forcing authorities to immediately close the bridge. Okay, thanks for the report. Now, okay, it's just more crumbling of the infrastructure. It's now a boat that hits a bridge, and now we learn maybe the bridge fell onto a gas line. It's like when the card castle starts falling down, nothing holds anymore. Matt Walsh sets a simple, clear definition of anti-Semitism. It's weird to listen to this because it's a Matt Walsh who remained relatively silent totally silent on Candace Owens. And there he is making a definition. I feel that he's being held hostage. I'm like, what is the pressure on Matt Walsh at this moment to talk about anti-Semitism? And listen to what he says.
Because in reality, to be anti-Semitic is to hate Jewish people because they are Jews. That's what anti-Semitism is. Everything that is not that is not anti-Semitism. You could say a lot of other things about Jewish people, that you could make a lot of other statements that are incorrect. You could even say things that are offensive. But unless they express that you hate Jewish people for being Jews, they're not anti-Semitic. Just like being racist against a particular race means that you hate the members of that race because they are members of that race. And again, you could say a lot of other things about people of a certain race that maybe are incorrect. You could even engage in stereotypes. You could say you could have misapprehensions. You could have misunderstandings. You could say a lot of things. But unless you're expressing that you hate these people because they're members of that race, it is not racist. Now, I realize this is the narrowest, most limited definition of these terms, and it's also the only coherent and clearly delineated definition. If you expand it beyond these boundaries, you will quickly find that now there are no real boundaries and anything can be included.
He's right, you know, and therefore, the very idea of racism is an emotionally grounded concept, because then the racism isn't even what you say or do. It is ultimately how you feel. And therefore, a lot of people are falsely getting accused of racism or anti-Semitism. But taking these words in the context of the Candace Owens stuff, it would mean that Matt Walsh has not been convinced by the town hall of the CEO of Daily Wire. What he's saying here is Candace Owens has not demonstrated anti-Semitism, because she has not stated that she hated Jews. And basically, by his definition, it would be the only way to be credibly accused of anti-Semitism. It would be to say, I hate Jews. So, very interesting that he's saying this. I don't know, is it from a past podcast or is it a recent one?
Because in reality,
someone was like, here he is recently commenting on the Texas stuff, and people were saying, my God, Matt Walsh is feeling obligated to comment on anti-Semitism, and he's doing so probably to save the reputation and the relationship with Daily Wire, to show that there's at least one of their guys who's not siding with the Candace Owens is an anti-Semite thesis. He says, establish appropriate punishments for anti-Semitic rhetoric on college campuses. There should not be any laws forbidding any kind of rhetoric on college campuses. There especially shouldn't be laws to ensure that college campuses are safe spaces. Haven't we spent the last like 10 years complaining about the safe space mentality? Now the governor of Texas is passing a law to enforce it. Look at this, Texas. Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in Texas on college and university campuses. This is absolute violations of the First Amendment, and it shouldn't survive. But they still do it to give to make it hard for people. So I realized that I was going on vacation at the same time that Lizzo is quitting her singing career. Now, I think it's bullshit, because celebrities do this a lot. They're like, oh, I quit. And then they really just needed a small break, and then they come back and it's like, oh yeah, well, I said this, but so let's see what she has to say. I'm getting tired of putting up with being dragged by everyone in my life and on the internet. All I want is to make music and make people happy and help the world be a little better than how I found it. But I'm starting to feel like the world doesn't want me in it. I'm constantly up against lies being told about me for clout and views, being the butt of the joke every single time because of how I look, my character being picked apart by people who don't know me and disrespecting my name. I didn't sign up for this shit. I quit. It's like, oh, she can come back and say, I wasn't quitting from singing. I was quitting from the role that people wanted to force me in. And so I don't think she's quitting for real. But that's what led me to be inspired of the thumbnail. I quit. I quit. Asterix. Now, listen, Lizzo is a product of the modern left. Lizzo is a singer you have to tolerate, because we need a singer who represents fat woman. And it's like, if not, if you don't have Lizzo, then what do you have? You have everyone competing to be Taylor Swift, like to be the most desirable, blonde, cute woman. Not that Taylor Swift is perfectly desirable, but you know, they converge toward looking good. Now, Lizzo is the specialist of the opposite, the specialist of the rebalancing of the leftist moral that says, hey, we need a successful artist that is like enormous. Enormous, so enormous that it's undoubtable that we are totally opened. So in a way, she is the how do we call this? These interns, these diversity hiree. She's the diversity hiree of the music industry. And she should appreciate that ultimately, because of the weird leftist mentality of today, it's her fat and ugliness that got her there. It is how she looks that got her there. Now there's a consequence. In the end, people objectify you, whether you're the cute woman or whether you got what you had because you were ugly. Now, if you got what you had because you were ugly, you're stuck with a whole other problem, which is, okay, you got what you wanted, fame, just to show you that we don't discriminate. There you go. You're famous now. But now people will consider you as the example of the fat woman. That's what Lizzo will always be. And that's the consequence of being at the top. If you're the most intelligent at the top, they will be jealous of your intelligence. If you're beautiful, they will be jealous of your beauty. And if you're fat, they're going to define you as the fat person in their mind. Gro3R sends $10. Thank you so much on Entropy. Thank you so much for supporting the show as I'm prepared to leave for vacation. It's good to have some money coming in for the road. He says, hi, Jeff. I became red-pilled during COVID. I missed the golden age. Got into Fuentes videos, and he was on your show. But as far as I can tell, you guys don't do that show anymore. I'm embarrassed to ask what happened for shame of being a new person. I understand if you'd rather not discuss. God bless. No, I mean, Fuentes, we had certain shows. I went on his show. He went on the public space with me as a host. So we had encounters many times, but we never co-hosted a show. We just were together on many streams back in those days, and we never had officially a show together of any kind. We just happened to cross each other. So no, you haven't missed a whole series of show between me and Nick. There's been a debate on this channel about Syria and whether Trump should airstrike Syria, where I was against it and he was for it. It seems he has changed his mind since. I think he's understood more of the Israeli pollution in our decision making system in America. So yeah, in the end, we encountered each other maybe on 8-10 streams historically. I don't know, but something like this. Let's see. This girl does an OnlyFans.
My name is Jubilee. I am 25, and I do have OnlyFans.
How long you been doing that?
Just about like 2 months.
What got you into it?
I lost my grandpa. He's very close to me, so I kind of want to go with his legacy, and I kind of want to do it for him.
You want to do OnlyFans to honor your grandfather's legacy? Like a corn star or something?
No, it's kind of like I've been wanting to kind of like keep his legacy going.
I don't know if I just misheard you. You said that you are...
Yeah,
can you say it again?
Can you explain how you're honoring your grandfather's legacy?
So he was a minister, so he didn't make much money, and that's like a way that I thought would help out.
Well, it's not clear to me. Are you saying my grandpa was a pastor, so he wasn't making money, so I'll make money now because I'm a porn star? Or is she saying it's good that I make money because I will be giving to some of the causes that were started by my grandfather at the church? Or are you just saying that by just continuing to exist and paying for your own food, you are continuing the legacy of your grandfather? In any case, it seems like she's looking for a cute story to tell, but ultimately she's just selling her body on the internet. And as a last news item, because I'm going on vacation, the minute I will close this show, my God, there will be a relief where I don't know what I'll do tomorrow. I have nothing to do. You know, for now, it's going to be leisure and family time and love. It's almost scary because all my life I always had, you have to do this next, this next, this next. You have to prepare the show of tonight, the show of tomorrow. You have to think about this, that. But when I close the show, and it's a short show, yes, but that's what it is. I'm going on vacation for a month. When I close the show, I will have nothing on my mind other than pleasure, leisure, love, and mathematics. It's going to be so crazy. Autism Capital reports the Biden admin declare Easter Sunday the National Transgender Day of Visibility. Pretty savage. People are complaining that they're taking over Easter by declaring the Easter Sunday the National Transgender Day of Visibility. First, this day of visibility has been declared March 31st, and Easter doesn't always end up on March 31st. So it's like it's a unique event this year that the two collide. Now, it may have been an initial goal when they set the date for this Trans Day of Visibility. They may have thought, oh, you know what? Let's catch Easter once every 7 years or whatever. Maybe that's what they thought. But in any case, I think it's a little overblown. And anyways, don't give the reactions to the left that they want. You know, in the end, yes, there is an attack against Christianity and white people and the regular traditions of Western civilization. But we don't want to make a scandal on each of the cases, because ultimately some of these, this one, for example, is not the fault of the Biden admin. Now, you can criticize the Biden admin for seemingly caring more about announcing it than even talking about Easter. And of course, it already gave a chance of for Trump to contrast himself, because Trump came out with a video and says, "Happy Easter. Easter is important." I don't know that it's viable what the Democrats are doing, to be constantly pandering to trans populations. It's like this is a very small portion of the population. You can't win elections if you just convince trans people. Anyways, let's not go crazy. I'm out of the internet for a month. You should follow the Discord or my Twitter account if you want news from me, because I may not have access to streaming on Odyssey, but on the road I might leave a couple of videos filmed, you know, like these bad streamers who film themselves holding their phones. That's what I might be able to do during my travel. But don't expect me to be here on Odyssey. I'll be back around May 1st. That's the target date. But I can't give you any more details. Much love. Thank you so much for your support across the years. And it's been an honor to serve the people of the internet. And we will continue doing this when I'm back. Bye-bye. Thank you.